Save big money on all of your outdoor projects at Menards. Create stunning patios and walkways with our huge in-stock selection of durable concrete blocks, ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast with our easy-to-use design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big money on our 16-inch brick face, cobblestone, or lake stone patio blocks on sale now. Plus, check out our flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
The following program is a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, and a proud member of the Simply Scary Podcast Network. Visit simplyscarypodcast.com to learn more about this and our other weekly storytelling programs, and become a patron today to show your support and get instant access to our extensive archive of downloadable tales of terror. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the show. Disclaimer. Horror Hill is a horror anthology podcast bringing you scary stories from all corners of the internet and beyond. As such, certain stories include content that some listeners might find offensive. Listener discretion is advised. Greetings, listeners. I'm Eric Peabody, and this is the Horror Hill Podcast. Tonight, we're going to be reading one story from Micah Edwards, a show favorite, and another from newcomer Keisto Healy. We'll begin with Cavities by Keisto Healy, where a successful dentist with a loving wife suddenly finds himself attending to a very strange walk-in. Then, in Micah Edwards' The Seven Stones, we step into the shoes of a newly widowed man that needs to come to terms with the shape his life has taken, as well as with the seven large stones that have suddenly appeared in his backyard, and the figure that he has seen lurking on his property. Ah, nothing like a nice evening with some scary stories, eh? You're listening to the free edition of this program. If you'd like to help support Horror Hill and also remove these pesky ads, head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to sign up today. You'll get instant access to hundreds of ad-free stories, so what are you waiting for? Also, if you're watching on YouTube, do us a favor and drop a like and subscribe. Become part of our dark circle, listeners. And now, from author Keisto Healy, I give you Cavities. I pushed my way through the front door, ready to collapse and sleep right there on the living room carpet, but I knew I still needed to eat dinner. I yawned and moaned. My muscles were all stiff. It had been a long day. I had a full day of scheduled appointments and two emergency root canals. I shut the door and locked it, and when I turned around, Brenda was standing there, looking at me with sympathy. "Another long one, huh?" "Very," I said. "I'm ready to fall on my face." "Well, lucky for you, I got home early, so I had time to make dinner," she said with a smile. I took her face in my hands and kissed her. "Oh, I love you. I don't even care what it is. I just appreciate not having to cook it." She laughed. I've always loved her laugh. It's not silly like so many others. It's almost musical, like an angel singing without words. "I'm glad, because it's nothing fancy. I got all caught up and they said I could take a half day. I spent most of it on the balcony reading Romantasy, but when you didn't walk in at 5, I knew you were probably having a long day and I should give you a night off from cooking. I made frozen raviolis and a grocery store jar of red sauce, a culinary delight. It sounds wonderful. I appreciate it, I told her as I slipped my shoes off and flexed my toes. I followed her into the kitchen, grabbed a plate from the cabinet, and shoveled some raviolis onto it from the steaming pot on the stove. Wine? Brenda asked. Please. I sat down to eat, and in a minute she joined me. We didn't bother talking about our work days. It wouldn't be great conversation to explain to her the process of repairing a boy's front teeth after he fell face first into the stage at the auditorium of his school. Instead, we spent our time together asking questions. You'd think after 10 years of marriage there wouldn't be any questions left to ask, but there always are. Sometimes they're silly and we laugh. Sometimes we learn things about each other, even after all this time. After dinner, we stood side by side and cleaned dishes together. I'm a lefty and she's a righty, so we kept bumping elbows and laughing about it. Oh, I forgot to tell you about the weird guy, she said. Weird guy? I toweled off my clean dish and stuck it in the cabinet I took it from. Yeah, he came by earlier and... Came by? For some reason, those words made me nervous. Outside of our parents, the only people to come by were work colleagues and the occasional neighbor. But those visits were few and far between, and in most cases, planned well in advance. Yeah, it was the strangest thing. He was wearing enough layers to make me sweat just looking at him. I know it's not exactly summer out there, but it was definitely overkill. He had a hood that kept his face mostly hidden and kept looking over his shoulder like he was being followed. He came here. She looked toward the front door. Yeah, walked right up and rang the bell. He was looking for you and said it was an emergency. My eyes widened. Jesus, Brenda, why were you so nonchalant? That's insane. Did you call the police? Nope. I said, I'm sorry, Dr. Glasgow isn't in at the moment. Maybe you should try the office where he works. And then what? I said in a panic. She shrugged. Then he left. And you didn't see him again? Nope. I'm guessing the guy had a pretty bad toothache. Yeah. It's still weird to show up at the dentist's house, Bren. She looked at me like I was a kid who just dropped my ice cream on the ground. Honey, it's harder to get dental care than anything. You have to pay up front, and you know how little insurance actually covers. A tooth infection can be deadly. I sighed. You're telling the dentist. She held up her hands defensively. All right, sorry. I'm just saying it's not that wild for someone to need help and not feel like they can go to the office. The clinic only does extractions. If he needed anything else, there's no place in this area for him to get it affordably. So I should just start taking house calls now? Work all day and then let poor people show up at my home to get their teeth fixed? Of course not. Look, he left when I said you weren't around. Yeah, well, I just hope he stays gone. I'm going to bed. You coming? She thought for a moment, then shook her head. Nah, I'm going to read my book some more. If the fairies get it on again, I might just come climb into bed and wake you up. See you then, I said, kissing her lips. I staggered to our room and finally fell onto the bed. I was asleep before I even realized it. I don't know if I dreamed about anything, but if I did, it wasn't anywhere near as terrifying as what I woke up to. I woke up with an angry, full bladder. Maybe it was because I didn't usually wake up in the middle of the night, but it seemed darker than usual. I rubbed my sleep-encrusted eyes and looked over at my wife's side of the bed. It was empty, and for a sleepy moment, I thought she must have had to pee too. It wasn't until I was in the bathroom emptying my bladder that I realized she probably fell asleep reading her book and never came to bed. I felt suddenly protective and wanted to find her and make sure she was at least covered and warm. Yawning, I made my way to the living room. I expected to find her on the couch, book in her lap and her glasses still on but crooked. It wouldn't have been the first time. She wasn't there, though. It didn't look like she'd ever been there. What had she said when I got home? My sleep-addled brain struggled for the answer. Then it hit me. The balcony. It was too cold for that at night, though, wasn't it? She did always love the stars and the moon, Maybe she brought a blanket out with her. I went upstairs and thought I must be right because the air was cooler. I walked down the hall and into the study. I smirked at the bookshelves when I entered. I loved how it displayed us both. A shelf of all my medical and dental books, and then a shelf of elf smut. The sliding glass door at the other end of the room was open and the curtains blew toward me, propelled by the breeze. "I hope you didn't fall asleep out there," I said as I approached. She didn't answer. It made me nervous. The balcony wall was high, so she would have to stand from her chair to go over the side. But if she was half asleep and disoriented, it was still possible. Did I mention I have anxiety? I approached with caution. I was talking gently to her. I didn't want to yell and startle her awake. I'd never be able to live with myself if I ended up being the reason she toppled over the wall. "Brenda? Brenda, baby?" I reached the door, caught the blowing curtain, and moved it to the side. My nervousness increased when I saw her favorite chair empty. What was worse was that her book was there, open on the floor. Brenda treasured her books. She didn't bend them too far because she didn't want the binding creased. If anyone dog-eared a page or creased her binding, she got visibly angry and told them to keep it, then bought a new copy for herself to keep pristine. I was staring at her book now, pages down, opened almost exactly halfway, creased binding staring at me. I looked at the wall to the balcony and knew I had to look over the edge, but I hated the idea of it. My heart was in my throat. I prayed to God to not let her be lying down there, broken on the concrete. I couldn't breathe as I moved towards it. I'd never been so scared in my life, and that was only the beginning. I got to the wall and wrapped my fingers around it. Then I froze. I knew I had to look, but I couldn't will myself to do it. What if she was dead? Oh, God. I tried saying her name again, softly at first, and then louder. "Brenda?" The only reply was the whistling wind. I screamed a curse word, and I wasn't that type of person. I was so used to being at the office and working on children, or just trying to keep a professional atmosphere in general, that curse words were all but out of my vocabulary. It took something with this level of distress to draw one out of me. I leaned forward and looked over, the wind blowing down the back of my neck and under my shirt. I shivered, but tried to focus. "Oh, thank God," I said when I didn't see her body lying broken on the walkway. My relief was short-lived, though, when I saw someone else standing at my front door. He looked homeless, wrapped in layers and topped with a navy blue hoodie pulled over his head. I knew it had to be him, the guy Brenda had told me about earlier. He came back, but where was Brenda? Did she see him? Maybe she went to wake me up and I was already gone. Or maybe she got scared and dropped her book and ran inside. But then, where was she? The bathroom? What if she went down to answer the door again and something happened? But if he did something to her, wouldn't he go away and not just stay there at the door? That was pretty damned conspicuous. There was only one way to know what he was up to, and that was to go down there and talk to him. Something about him creeped me out. My instinct told me not to go down there, to do the opposite and lock everything and stay far away from that guy. But that wasn't really an option. I had to know if he knew what happened to Brenda. As I was thinking this, he seemed to sense my presence, and he looked up at me. I didn't mean to, but I gasped. His face was bathed in the shadow of his hood, but I could see enough to know I should be frightened. His skin was scarred and torn, and his eyes were like cat eyes. I swear they glowed in the dark. I was terrified, but I felt bolder being up there on the balcony than I would being in front of him at the door. So I called out, "What are you doing here? Where's Brenda?" He didn't say anything. Instead, he waved me toward him with a finger and gestured for me to come down. My instincts were screaming. I patted my pocket, looking for my phone, and realized I left it on the nightstand next to my bed. I always unload my pockets before bed to make sure I don't forget to change anything over to my clean pants the next day. It's habit. I cursed for the second time. I needed to check the whole house and make sure that Brenda wasn't inside somewhere safe and sound. I could grab my phone during the search and call the police. Maybe he would get tired of waiting for me and just leave. It wasn't an elaborate plan, but at least it was a plan. I went room to room, frantically calling for her. Brenda? Brenda, honey, where are you? Brenda? I looked in insane places I knew she would never be, just to satisfy my anxiety and know I checked everywhere. I looked in closets and under beds, behind doors and in cupboards. I grabbed my phone while I was in the bedroom, but I wanted to make sure she wasn't lying somewhere, sleeping the night away, before I called the police. Sure, I would have to deal with a man in rags on my stoop, but it didn't necessarily have to involve the law. A lot of the time, homeless people were treated badly. They had it hard enough as it was, and Brenda was a huge advocate for all human rights. She would be incredibly pissed at me if that guy got roughed up because I was feeling anxious. The more rooms I checked, though, the more I started looking at my phone as a lifeline. If Brenda was nowhere in here, that meant she had to be out there, and the image of her book returned to my mind. "Oh, what have you done?" I said quietly. To be honest, I'm not sure if the question was directed at the man who may have taken my wife or at Brenda for going to open the door and talk to a creepy stranger in the middle of the night. Either way, the question was appropriate. When I got to the front door, my shoulders sagged. Brenda was not in this house. I frowned at the door and took my phone out. I wanted to be able to tell this man when I opened the door that the police had already been called. But before I could even press those three important numbers, my phone rang. It felt louder than usual, ear-shattering in the quiet of the night. I don't answer the phone for anyone other than Brenda or my parents. Everyone else, I text. I didn't even know this number, but I couldn't shake the feeling that whoever was on the other end might know something about Brenda, and not answering could mean her life. It could have just been my anxiety screaming in my ear, but still, I wasn't shutting it off. I pressed the green answer button on my screen and held the phone to my ear. "Hello?"
"You're going to want to not do anything, stupid," a voice said. It sounded thick, mucousy, sickly.
"What?" It was all I could think of to say.
"If you call the police like you just intended to, I'll kill her. Hang up the phone, put it back in your pocket, and open the door."
I was really trembling then. I didn't know what to do. There only seemed like one choice, so I did what he said. When I opened the door, I gulped, my hand going to my mouth. The stranger stood facing me, and he held my unconscious wife by the back of her collar. She was draped on the floor at his feet as if she was no more than a lifelike dummy replica of herself. I had to ask, "Is she?"
"Not yet. I need you to invite me in and then move out of my way so I can enter."
I didn't move or speak for a moment. I just couldn't stop staring at Brenda. My heart hurt like it never had before.
"Now!"
I nodded and stepped aside, but he didn't move. He just glared at me with those piercing eyes.
"You forgot the first part, Dr. Glasgow."
I tried to speak, and my throat wouldn't let me. I cleared it and tried again, and was surprised by how mousy my voice sounded. "Come in." He nodded and stepped inside, dragging Brenda's limp form with him. When inside, he shut the door and locked it.
"What did you do to her? What do you want?"
I asked.
"I couldn't break in, and I knew you wouldn't let me in, because the good doctor doesn't associate with street people. But your kind-hearted wife presented me with an opportunity. She was out on the balcony reading her book at night. I thrive on the night, Dr. Glasgow. I simply went up and brought her down as a bargaining chip to gain entry.
But she's...
asleep. I couldn't chance her screaming and waking the neighborhood, so I told her to go to sleep and to dream good things until I told her to wake. This man was insane. I shook my head and stammered before finally finding my voice again.
So you're some kind of magician, a hypnotist or something?
Not hardly, he said. He removed his hood for the first time, and I couldn't hold back the gasp. His face was covered in burns, scars, and scabs. His hair was in clumps upon a bald-patched melanoma-spotted head. His nose was little more than slits, two nostrils caving into the rocky crater of his face. His ears came to pointed tips, like the elves in Brenda's smutty books.
What happened to you? I asked.
I was a cocky young man my first century, Doctor.
What?
I thought I could walk in the daylight because I could just drink and heal, and pain was something I cherished, not ran from. The burns of the sun didn't frighten me. Pain was a reminder that I was alive. People refer to us as undead, but that's for books and movies. I'm very much alive.
Save big money on all of your outdoor projects at Menards. Create stunning patios and walkways with our huge in-stock selection of durable concrete blocks, ready to take home today. Plus, get free estimates fast with our easy-to-use design program in-store or on Menards.com. Save big money on our 16-inch brick face, cobblestone, or lake stone patio blocks on sale now. Plus, check out our flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
I swallowed a lump in my throat. My gaze kept darting from this horrible image to my unconscious wife at his feet.
Are you saying you're a vampire?
He nodded. Forget everything you think you know. It's all wrong.
Okay, I said, because what else could I say to this strange man?
I was just concerned about Brenda. As a living being, I am susceptible to human illness, it seems, at least somewhat. I've never had a cold or the flu in my life, but my constant sunburns resulted in skin cancer that metastasized. I can't really walk into the clinic and sign up for chemo and radiation. Feeding, though. Feeding pushes the symptoms back. It restores my health for a bit, but the illness always returns. That is why I must continue to feed. I swallowed again.
Do you want to feed on us?
He sighed and rolled his piercing eyes, glaring at me like I was stupid. If that was all I wanted, I would have already taken sustenance from Brenda. Life is never so simple, is it, Doctor?
No,
I asked, more of a question than an answer. I wasn't sure if I was meant to actually respond or if that was the answer he was looking for. No, he repeated, and I almost sighed with relief. I can't feed. My fangs have horrific cavities. The pain is awful, but as I stated, I can deal with that. But they're breaking, and if I lose them, I die. I won't be able to fight the cancer. I raised an eyebrow. This time, I was looking at him like he was dumb. I was feeling more confident. Obviously, that's not true, I said, hands on my hips. You could just drink it out of meat packages, or hell, stab someone and put your mouth under the flow like we used to do with the Slurpee machine as kids. You didn't really think this through, did you? He snarled at me and I jumped back, fearing for my life once more. I probably shouldn't poke the beast, I realized. If I needed the blood to go to my stomach, that would be fine. I told you to forget what you know about vampires, Dr. Glasgow. You clearly didn't listen. I sighed, my eyes on Brenda, wondering what she was dreaming about behind her closed lids.
So you need it in your veins or something? Get a syringe. They have them at the local pharmacy. I can even give you some to start with.
He was trembling with rage now, a pot boiling over,
and my inner voice was screaming at me to shut up.
"It is the brain that tells everything else to work and how, Dr. Glasgow. My fangs are retractable, thin, like the syringes you speak of. They are connected to arterial-like tubes that pass through my sinuses and go directly to my brain. My heart is dead. It would do nothing with the blood if I injected it into my veins. But human blood gives my brain life, and it sends electrical impulses to the rest of my organs, jump-starting them and making them function, more like your fabled Frankenstein monster."
I shook my head. "That doesn't make sense. Blood on the brain is dangerous. Brain bleeds can be fatal. I got a concussion when I fell on the ice one winter, and they were very worried about brain bleed."
"It is not blood that I consume. My fangs go into the back of the neck or through the eyes to the brain. I take the cerebrospinal fluid as my own leaks out. It's part of the vampirism. It's thick and filled with harmful proteins that need to be replaced."
I shivered at the grisly image of this horrific man sinking his fangs into someone's eyes and drinking the fluid from their brain. Even still, I said, "I'm sorry, but I'm a medical professional and I don't buy it."
He raged at me, his mouth unhinged and his jaw dropped lower than it should. Two long needles shot out from his gums, and I could see that they were stained and cracked. He growled, but as a dentist, I was more interested in understanding the strange teeth. I'd never seen anything like them.
When his mouth closed, he said,
"You're a dentist, Dr. Glasgow. You're not House. Nothing about me makes sense. I have dead, petrified organs that only work when they get impulses from my brain powered by human brain fluid. I burn in the sun and develop skin cancer. I'm a monster."
"But you said it metastasized. If the organs are dead until you feed, doesn't that mean it can't spread like that?"
"It should. But even when I get them working, they have complications now. Cells that are eating at them, fighting the instructions my brain is sending them. My body is working against itself."
"Doesn't that mean feeding is actually bad? Because it's not just feeding you, it's feeding the disease."
"And yet, it's the only option. Eventually, my jump-started organs will fail and I will perish, but not feeding will end me now."
"Why? If you're not truly feeding on it, you won't starve without it. Maybe you'll be fine."
"I haven't fed in days, and look at me. My burns won't heal. My nose fell off. If I don't feed, I will rot and turn to dust."
"So you are dead, kind of."
"I don't know what I am. I didn't ask for this. I was made. And now it was so long ago, the details are little more than a blur."
I nodded. I hated to admit it, but I was fascinated by the stranger's story. If he was being truthful, then Brenda was unharmed and I could allow myself to listen and participate in this bizarre experience. "So your options are to rot and die or live with the agony of cancer slowly killing you." "That sucks."
"It does. Especially after 150 years of life. But I suppose true immortality doesn't exist, Doctor. All things must come to an end eventually."
"Why didn't you just go to the dentist?"
"I just did."
"I mean, the office, like everybody else. You've been alive for so long. Surely you have money and insurance and things, right?"
"If only. Look at me. I can't walk into anywhere, especially during the day with my flesh smoldering. The money I have is stolen from those I feed upon, and it isn't much. I live in hiding, like a rat. There is nothing glorious about true vampiric life."
"Then why keep going? Why not just let it end? Stop suffering." His anger seemed to fall away like a towel that wasn't tied tight enough. He sighed, and his shoulders slumped.
"Many times I've asked myself the same question. I guess it's the humanity in me, Doctor. I have a will to live, the drive to fight, and even at my weakest, most pained moments, I can't escape it. I couldn't argue against that. I pitied and respected this creature in equal measure. "Also," he said, "I can't enter places without being invited. If I went to the dentist, skin smoking from under my hood, I would be glued to the doorway until someone told me to come in, and it would surely cause a scene."
I nodded at this. He wasn't wrong. I also thought about how he couldn't have fed on Brenda if his fangs weren't working, and his threat was empty to gain access to my home. Then again, not feeding didn't mean he wasn't dangerous. It was probably better to not take chances with someone who had nothing to lose. "So you want me to fix your fangs? But what if I can't? I've never worked on anything like them before."
"Then you will watch me rot and die in your chair, because this is my last-ditch effort. My will be gone."
"That's a lot of pressure. This is my home. I don't even have everything I'd need. We'd have to drive to my office, and I'd want to take x-rays first to get a better idea of what I'm up against."
"No, I know you have your old chair and things in your basement. You will do it there."
"But those things aren't set up for use. They're just in storage. They're definitely not sanitized."
"Make it happen."
I don't think I can."
"Brenda, awake," he said.
My wife jolted upright, her eyes wide and confused. She mumbled something.
"Don't speak, Brenda. Strangle yourself."
She stared at me, her eyes filled with terror, but her hands grasped her throat and squeezed. I watched her face start to color, and I screamed, "Jesus, okay, stop! Just stop!"
"Brenda, stop that silliness now and go back to sleep, dear. Dream happy things."
She just collapsed like someone pulled her plug from the wall. She was breathing peacefully, though, and her eyes fluttered behind her lids. I looked at the bruises on her neck caused by her own hands, and I felt angry. "Why me? There are tons of dentists. Why disrupt my life and hurt my family?"
"You are who I chose."
"That's it?" I snapped.
"That's it."
"Well, then why not just glamour me into doing it and make me your little slave like you did to my wife, who you said yourself is the better person of the two of us?"
"Because I can't." What
do you mean you can't?"
"I can make people sleep and do things to and for themselves, but I can't make someone do something for me. It doesn't work. I've tried, time and again. I thought I must have just needed to work on the skill, train my power. But after all these years, I can't even get someone to give me a free cup of coffee on a cold day. I read that it was put in as a failsafe to prevent us from glamoring anyone and everyone into inviting us in. If we could just make them let us in, we would be unstoppable."
"But who created you in the first place? And why?"
"I don't know. All I know is what's in the journal I found from another like me. I will leave it with you as payment for your services. Maybe you can find out more about my kind and our purpose."
I felt a sudden thrill at this. I hated that a monster had abducted my wife and used her to force me into working off the clock, and yet I tingled with excitement. I felt like I had been shown a secret door that led to a magical world no one knew existed. I almost hated that Brenda was unconscious. I felt like she would love this whole adventure. Though it may have been tragically disappointing to find out that real-life vampires are not sexy like the ones in her romance books. "All right," I said then. "Come to the basement with me. You've got to give me time to prepare."
"Hurry," he said, gesturing for me to lead the way.
I did as he said. I ran through my things, trying to set up a makeshift workspace. I sprayed and wiped things down to at least half-ass sanitize them. Then he sat, and I put an apron over him and stared into his mouth. His fangs weren't the only teeth in bad shape. His entire mouth was a mess. Maybe it was due to the rot of not feeding. I didn't know, but I didn't want to volunteer for more work. I wanted to get this man out of my house and get Brenda back to normal. So I took a deep breath and nodded. "Can you, make them stay out for me?" His eyes burned through me, but he said nothing. His jaw just fell again. I heard the needle-like teeth squish through his gums as they shot toward me. I stared in wonder at them and traced them with a gloved finger. It looked like I was going to have to perform my third root canal of the day. "This is going to be a big job," I said. "Let me get you some Novocaine to numb your face." I turned around to do just that, but he grabbed my wrist. For someone dying, his grip was immensely strong. My heart skipped a beat and I turned back to look at him. "I'm trying to help you," I said. "Let me help you."
"Then let me feel it," he told me. "I need the pain. I can't feed. The pain is the only thing I've got to tie me to life. Please."
"But if you jerk or thrash when it gets bad, and it will get bad, I could make a mistake or break the tooth, and then it's over."
"I won't."
"How do you know?"
"Please, doctor."
I sighed and nodded. Then I got to work. I cringed watching him suffer, but he did keep it under control, shaking and shedding tears I didn't know he was able to spend. After over an hour, I finally stood back and said, "I don't know. I think I saved them. How do they feel?" He snarled at me, his eyes wild like an animal, and I jumped backwards into my table, knocking the tools free. They clattered to the ground loudly. I could see him fighting against his instincts. With his fangs in working order, his body must have been screaming for him to feed, to replenish himself and stop his organs from dying. I stood frozen in fear, waiting to see if he had the power to fight it, or if I had just given someone the weapon with which to murder me. He leapt from the chair and ran to the stairs, where he huddled up on a step, curled into a ball.
"I must go," he said. "The hunger is too strong. My body knows I'm dying and is screaming for relief. I won't harm you or Brenda, but only because I need you and I've already been invited into your home. You will be my dentist now, Dr. Glasgow."
"Wait, what?" I said, but he ran up the steps into my house. Despite his words, I worried for Brenda, so I followed. When I got to the living room, she was still sleeping soundly, and the front door was wide open. I hurried outside onto the stoop and looked, but all I saw were the trees blowing in the wind. A scream sounded in the distance, and I gasped. "Oh, God, I'm sorry," I said quietly, knowing that I caused that death. I turned to go back inside when I saw a worn leather book full of yellowed pages on the step beside my door. It seemed he kept his word. I picked it up and took it inside with me. I locked the door, even though I knew it probably wouldn't keep him out if he wanted in. After all, he took Brenda from our balcony and there's no way up from the ground. I tried not to think about it. When I turned back to the house, Brenda was sitting up and looking at me. She was disoriented and sleepy. After a big yawn into her hand, she said, "Honey, why am I on the floor?" I gave her a reassuring smile. I was good at that. My patients required it daily. "It's okay," I told her, just like I told them. "Everything's going to be fine. Let's get you to bed." She still looked confused, but she stood. I took her elbow and led her to bed. In moments, she was curled up on her side, snoring softly. I went back up to the study and out to the balcony, where I retrieved her book. I put a bookmark in where it was open to, hoping that was the page she was on, and I set it on the desk in the room for her. I knew she would be upset about the binding, but I felt like that was a small problem in comparison to the fact that a monster had just invaded our lives, and I knew he would be back. This was far from over.
I came in and closed and locked the sliding door that led to the balcony. It didn't make me feel safe or confident, but I had to do what was within my power to control. I looked at the book the man left me, a monster's journal. It would have to wait. I had to get up for work in just a few hours, and tooth pain made people frantic and hysterical. I couldn't leave them waiting. Opening a drawer in my desk, I put the book inside, closed the drawer, and locked it. I don't know why. I didn't keep anything secret from Brenda, and never had. I guess it was just that the book felt so rare, so special, that I coveted it. I wasn't locking it away from my wife. I was locking it away from everyone. With a yawn of my own, I made my way back downstairs and I climbed into bed beside my wife. I wrapped my arm around her middle and she put her hand over mine, cooing softly. I nuzzled my face into her neck. After tonight, the little things mattered that much more. I didn't know what tomorrow would bring, but I knew that my life had been forever changed. It was hard to sleep. My heart was still racing. I stared at the window and listened to the screams ripping through the night. Brenda's hand tightened on my own, and she sleepily mumbled, "I love you." "I love you too," I said quietly, kissing her cheek. The screams abruptly stopped, and I shuddered. I pulled Brenda more tightly into me and held her with everything I had. "I did it for her," I told myself. I had no choice. But was that really true? I saved my wife, but at what cost? What did I just unleash upon the world? Was it worth it? My heart said yes, but all I could think about was that journal locked in my desk upstairs. I was terrified of the answers it contained. I didn't know if I was ready to receive them, but I had to force it out of my mind. I nuzzled Brenda lovingly and closed my eyes to keep from staring at the window. Then, despite everything, I slept. You've been listening to Cavities by Kisto Healy. Kisto Healy is an author from North Carolina that writes in several genres, including science fiction, fantasy, and of course, horror. Also an artist and musician, you can find more of Kisto's work on Amazon. Next, here's The Seven Stones by Micah Edwards. A year and a half after my wife died, I went on a date. The night before had been not good. In fact, there's no sense in being coy. Let's call it what it was. Bad. Awful. I'd been okay, you know. Not perfect, maybe not even great, but it had been a year. I'd thrown myself into work and hobbies and life. I didn't even think about her every day anymore. Most days, sure, but not every day. I thought I could see a light at the end of the tunnel. I was going to come out of it different, but I was going to get through. And then it was the anniversary of her death, and I was not okay. It was the word anniversary that got me more than anything. We'd had 23 anniversaries together, me and her. I'd had one without her, the month after she had died, and that had been a bad day as well. I knew it was going to be, though. I planned for it. I had friends over. We celebrated her. We got tastefully drunk and told stories. I cried a lot. They were all there for me. It was a hard day, but I didn't have to do it alone. This one, it had been an entire year. A lot of those friends had moved on, and I don't blame them. It's got to be tough inviting your widowed friend out to all of the things that couples do. They let me third and fifth wheel for a long time, and I appreciated it. After a while, though, Most of them started dropping hints that they had a friend I might like to meet, or maybe I should talk to that woman at the bar, or things like that. I wasn't ready, and I didn't exactly know how to say that. So we kind of just saw each other less and less. I should have called them up on the anniversary of her death. They would have come, any of them. Instead, I sat alone at home until the quiet and the weight of the house got to be too much. And then I got drunk. Painfully, dangerously drunk. I went through our wedding album until I couldn't see the pictures through my tears. Then I threw it against the wall for being blurry. The album broke, metal rings springing open to throw pictures everywhere. I punched the wall for breaking the album, and then kicked it for hurting my hand. I slammed another drink and screamed until my throat hurt, then drank more to cool my ragged vocal cords. I raged at my wife for leaving me, at myself for not dying first, and at the world for allowing such things to happen. I don't know when I finally passed out. A long time after I blacked out, unfortunately. I woke up in the morning still fully clothed, with a killer headache and a throat that felt like I'd been strangled. The house was in absolute shambles. I'd smashed pictures to the floors, punched holes in the walls, and thrown furniture across the room. Bottles and glasses littered the kitchen counter and floor. Most were empty. Some were broken. Shards of glass were everywhere. I downed a handful of aspirin and about a pitcher of water and started straightening up. I righted the chairs, rehung the pictures, and carefully swept up all of the glass I'd strewn about the house, marveling at the fact that I hadn't cut my feet open at any point during my drunken demolition. I was truly lucky not to have hurt myself. I was carrying the dustpan outside of the trash can when I found my next surprise. In my backyard, arranged in a circle about 4 feet across, were seven oval stones sticking about 2 feet out of the ground. They were all uniform in size and had been hammered deep into the dirt. One of them was cracked straight down the middle, presumably from being hit. The others all had scuff marks along the top, but were still whole. My tool shed door was open, and my sledgehammer was lying next to the stones, so I supposed I was the one who had put them there. I didn't remember doing it, though. I couldn't even remember seeing those stones anywhere before. I hoped that whoever I'd taken them from didn't miss them. I pulled on one experimentally, but it was stuck in tight. I was going to have to get the shovel and dig these out if someone wanted them back. As I was standing in the circle examining the stones, something caught my attention over by the tool shed. There was someone standing inside, past where the light reached. I could just barely make out the humanoid shape. They didn't move at all. They just stood, watching me. "Hello?" I called out. There was no response. After a moment, I tried again. "Hey, you can't be in there. This is private property." Still no answer, nor even any movement. I stepped out of the circle of stones, intending to head over there. But as I passed the edge, the morning sun briefly blinded me. By the time I got the sun out of my eyes, the figure in the tool shed was gone. I thought about going over there anyway to look around and see if they were still hiding inside. But then I thought, what if they were? I was in no mood to get into a fight with some weirdo. They knew they'd been caught. Better to give them space to run away. None of my tools were worth any real money. Certainly nothing worth risking my life over. I'd come back to lock the tool shed once I was sure they'd bailed out. In the meantime, I was going to have some more aspirin, another glass of water, and maybe a short nap. I woke up to my phone buzzing. I checked to see who was calling, but there was nothing but a notification from an app.
You have a match. The logo was a closed eye. I didn't recognize it, so I clicked on the notification. The loading screen said, blindly, with a picture of two people covering their eyes. It was clearly a dating app. I had no idea how it had gotten on my phone. And then again, I didn't know much about what had happened last night. I was lucky to still have a phone. The message that popped up had the name of a restaurant in town, along with the current date and a time of 7:30 p.m. There was no information on who had sent it, only the option to accept or deny. I thought of 100 reasons to reject the date. I almost hit deny. Then I looked at the holes I'd punched in my walls, at the pictures with no glass in their frames, and at my generally disheveled house. And I tapped accept. Your date will be wearing a yellow top or dress, the app told me. You will wear a blue shirt. The rest will happen blindly. A bit gimmicky, but clearly I'd found it compelling enough last night. I got up in search of a blue shirt to wear. She was waiting for me when I got to the restaurant. I saw her as soon as I walked in the door. Her dress was the color of corn silk in the sun. She looked like summer. She smiled when she saw me and held up the blindly app screen questioningly. I nodded and walked over to join her. I can't describe that evening. It was easy in a way I hadn't ever expected. I thought I would be awkward, lost, maybe even angry. I knew I wasn't ready, no matter what my friends had thought. It wasn't fair to subject someone else to me. And yet, it was wonderful. She was light. She was happy. She was sincere. I don't know what we talked about. I only knew that time flew by and I enjoyed every moment of it. She was nothing like my wife. I couldn't have stood it if she were. But we connected the way only my wife and I ever had. We had dinner and drinks, and then we walked around the city talking about everything and nothing, just enjoying each other's presence. I wish this night didn't have to end, she said. It doesn't, I told her, surprised at my own boldness. She smiled and pushed me teasingly. How can we have a second date if the first one doesn't end? Besides, I'm sure you have things you need to do. I thought about the state of my house. There are a few things I could patch up. Patch them up, then. She smiled. I'll see you soon. It was nearly midnight by the time I parked in my driveway. As I was walking toward the front door, I heard a resounding crack from behind the house. I circled around to see what it was. Moonlight flooded the yard, revealing it to be still and empty. My tool shed door yawned open, a black portal into nothingness. The seven stones stood in their ring. A second one was cracked, split from top to bottom. My sledgehammer was exactly where I had found it that morning. The noise could have been the stone splitting in two, but if so, what had caused it to crack? I went to bed unsettled, but as soon as I lay down, I fell fast asleep. I spent the next day actually cleaning the house. The drunken damage I'd done was only the most visible of the problems. Counters were dusty. Clothes weren't put away. I couldn't remember the last time I'd really cleaned the kitchen. The house, like me, had just been sort of generally coasting along. And also like me, it had been slowly slipping into disrepair. I scrubbed, I swept, I cleaned, and the house was much better for it. I needed to do something about the holes I'd put in the walls. I thought I had some drywall patches around, but I couldn't find them anywhere. It was possible that I'd put them out in the tool shed. For some reason, the thought of going out there to find them made me shiver. It wasn't that unreasonable. It was getting late in the day, and I never had gone to make sure that my uninvited visitor had left. For all I knew, they'd be camping out in my shed. I really didn't want to barge in on a crazy person right now. I was exhausted from all the cleaning. And besides, the patches probably weren't even there. I knew my rationales were a bit thin, but I didn't care. I went to the hardware store to buy new drywall patches. I left the tool shed as a problem for the next day. The walls were cleaned, patched, mudded, and ready for repainting by the time I went to bed that night. The house was the cleanest it had been since my wife died. I felt proud. I felt tired. I was asleep by 10 p.m., but I woke up exactly at midnight to a crack that echoed across the backyard and had the painful resonance of breaking bone. I crept over to the window to peer out. Just as before, the yard was silent and devoid of movement, but a third stone had split. I could see faint moonlight spilling through the jagged fracture. I watched out of the window for a long time. Nothing moved. Nothing changed. Eventually, I ventured into the backyard with a flashlight. I shone it around vaguely, but nothing moved other than the shadows. They leapt and danced, telling incoherent stories. I could not see into the tool shed. I walked closer, passing through the circle of stones as I did so. As soon as I was inside, I could see the figure in the doorway again. I stopped, dead in my tracks. "You can't be here," I said. My voice sounded shrill. The figure hung back from the entrance, shrouded in darkness. It did not move. It was tall. Its head and face were hidden by the doorframe. It was the general shape of a human. I stared at it, trying to make out details, but they were hidden in the gloom. Something disturbed me about its feet. The longer I looked, the more convinced I became that they did not touch the ground. I backed away, unnerved. My view of the figure ended as soon as I left the circle of stones, but I could still feel its presence. I just couldn't see it when I wasn't between the stones. I thought about going over to the tool shed, shining my light inside and seeing what was truly there. Instead, I went back into the house and locked the door. The next day, I painted. I had planned to just paint over the patches, but I didn't know where the matching paint was, and once I was buying new paint anyway, I decided to go all in. I redid the entire house in bright colors. I taped and tarped and rolled and brushed until I was dizzy from the fumes and I could barely lift my arms. At the end, the house looked vibrant and new. It felt like a weight was lifting. I tumbled into bed before 8 o'clock. I was sure that nothing could wake me, but that brittle crack brought me out of a dead sleep in an instant. I didn't have to check my phone to know that it was midnight on the dot. I didn't go outside. I didn't even get out of bed. I just lay there, picturing that empty tool shed door and hoping that whatever was inside wasn't picturing me in return. I woke to a text. "How's your patching?" "Patchy," I sent back. "Want to get breakfast?" I checked the time and sent a follow-up. "Lunch?" She was as vibrant as she had been on our first date. Her sundress was as light and flirty as her pleased grin when she spotted me. "It's good to see you again," she said. "I thought you might be gone." "Where would I go?" She shrugged. "Sometimes people just go." "Well, I'm here to stay," I said. She gave me a smile that spoke of secrets and sadness. "No one's here forever." I didn't like the feeling that comment gave me, so I let the topic drop. The darkened moment passed like a cloud over the sun, and then the day was fresh and light again. I took her to my favorite spots in town, the park and river and bars, all of the places that had ever meant anything to me. I don't know how we packed it all in. It was a lifetime summarized in a single day. She was there, appreciative of it all, but somewhere along the way, I realized I was my own real audience. I saw, too, that she had known that all along and enjoyed being along just for the ride. Afternoon faded into evening, which dropped rapidly into night. I lost track of time entirely. I was shocked when I checked my phone and saw that it was 3 in the morning. In the back of my head, I had been waiting for that deathly crack to warn me of another passing midnight. It made no sense. I was miles from home. But still, I had expected it, and it was a vast relief to find that it had not happened. It was nothing supernatural. It was just a sound. "You look happy," she said. "Something I was worried about turned out to be no big deal," I said. There was no darkness when she was there. We didn't sleep that night. It didn't seem to be important. We danced through the night until dawn brought back the sun, and somewhere in there, my endless day of reminiscence flowed easily into doing all the things I had always meant to do. We toured art galleries and explored old shops and found our way into all of the nooks and crannies that the town had to offer. It was seamless and effortless, and when we found ourselves back at my place at the end of it all, it was the only natural progression that could have happened. I showed her my house with the same pride I had shown her the town, and knew that again I was showing myself. The damage had been repaired. The paint brightened the rooms. The house was good. It was whole. "Show me the stones," she said. It was dark outside. The tool shed was still open. Darkness on darkness. "I don't want to." "It's okay," she said softly and took my hand. I took courage from her touch. We went to see the stones. 5 of them were cracked now. We walked toward them and stood in the center of the circle. I could see the thing in the tool shed watching me. It didn't move. It was waiting for me to come to it. We looked into the darkness of the tool shed together, she and I. "Why is this happening?" I asked. "It's almost midnight," she said. She knelt and touched an unbroken stone, a gentle caress. It snapped brutally. I felt the impact shudder down my spine. She stood and faced me again. "You have one more day if you need it." "What happens after that?" She nodded to the tool shed. "It comes for you." "And if I don't need the day?" She smiled that smile of secrets, the one I had seen for a moment before. "Then you go to it." "That's not much of a choice." "It's the only choice there ever is. You can run from your life, or you can embrace it. It's as true of the end as any other part." "I'm not ready to die." She touched my neck as gently as she'd touched the 6th stone. "You died a week ago." I turned my eyes to the tool shed and to the thing that hung waiting in the darkness within. I could feel its anticipation. And finally, I could feel my own, too. I left her in the circle and walked forward without dread. I stepped through the darkness of the tool shed door. "I've been waiting," it whispered, without breath. I embraced what waited for me beyond. That was The 7 Stones by Micah Edwards. Micah Edwards graduated from William & Mary with a degree in English and no particular plans to use it. He now finds himself occupying various roles as an author, a comedian, and a database administrator, depending on the day of the week. He resides in Richmond, Virginia, the world's premier home of authors named Micah Edwards. And with that, my friends, we conclude tonight's episode. I'd like to extend my thanks to Keisto Healy and Micah Edwards for their stories, And of course, to all of you for coming back to Horror Hill. I'll be back with more chilling tales next week, so be sure to tune in. In the meantime, stay spooky. You've been listening to the Horror Hill Podcast, a production of Chilling Entertainment and the creative team at Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Tonight's episode was hosted, narrated, scored, and finalized by yours truly, Eric Peabody. Additional music by Nikki McSorley. Got a terrifying tale of your own that you'd like performed? Email it to us at submissions@simplyscarypodcast.com to have your work considered for future production. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, why not help us spread our dark presence online? You can follow Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on social media and upvote, subscribe, and hit the bell notification icon if you're listening to this on YouTube. It helps us out a lot and also keeps you up to date on new episodes. If you'd like access to uninterrupted horror, free of ads and these annoying bookend segments, might I recommend signing up to be a patron? You'll get access to hundreds of episodes of this show, as well as everything from the other programs in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights cabal. That means all of Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Drew Blood's Dark Tales, and more. It's a veritable smorgasbord of horrific delights. Head to chillingtalesfordarknights.com to get started. If you're looking for someone to narrate or handle audio production for your own personal project, I just so happen to know a guy. Email me at ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com and we can talk details. That's ericpeabodyvoice@gmail.com. If darkness is what you're after, listener, your search is over. Yet, let it be known, you haven't found the darkness. The darkness has found you.